Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
Media advocates often call for a balanced media diet, getting your news from different sources, hearing different perspectives, and making your decisions by weighing competing viewpoints. But what do you do if you live in one of the almost 80 communities across the country where media companies are quietly merging their TV newsrooms, cutting staff, and sharing news content? This kind of covert consolidation isn't supposed to happen. There are rules that protect the public from media consolidation because it results in less news and information getting to the public, and it allows one company to monopolize the debate of important public issues. Free Press has launched ChangeTheChannels.org, an initiative that calls attention to this growing problem. The website has real examples of covert consolidation and an interactive map with details about each community affected by it. Program coordinator Libby Reinisch explains that in Denver, for instance, viewers see virtually identical news being read on two different stations by two different anchors.
What's incredible about these deals is that a lot of folks that I've spoken to in Denver didn't even realize this was happening.
Because these deals don't have to be reported, it's been difficult to find information about them. ChangeTheChannels.org scoured news stories and press releases to find the 200 stations that are listed on the site. The press releases spun consolidation as good for the community, claiming they would free up resources to provide more coverage of other local stories.
Of course, that never happens in the long run. They end up, you know, laying off journalists and really just kind of getting by with pooled coverage. In one of our recent reports, there's actually a quote from the president of one of these media companies advising fellow media companies to stop sending out press releases announcing these deals because it does more harm than good.
Part of that harm are the layoffs. 65 in Honolulu, 40 in Denver, 30 each in Peoria and Syracuse, and the list goes on. Broadcasters cry poverty, but Reinisch says that's not the case.
It's simply not true. These stations have been seeing record profits. And on top of that, what we found is when they do consolidate and lay off dozens of staff, while they may claim that they will reinvest those savings in the community and in meeting their public interest obligations, in fact, they use those savings to pad their bottom lines.
An interesting case is unfolding in an unlikely place that could affect the future of documentary filmmaking: tax court. This spring, an Arizona tax court trial caused a judge to write a statement which, if memorialized in a ruling, has filmmakers gravely concerned about the future of their craft. The trial dealt with a case in which the IRS argued that documentary filmmaker Lee Story could not deduct business expenses related to her film Smile Till It Hurts, the Up With People story, because as a documentary film, its primary purpose is to educate and expose, not to make a profit. The implication? All documentary filmmaking is a not-for-profit activity. Eddie Schmidt is the president of the board of directors for the International Documentary Association. When the IDA heard about the Story case and the back taxes that the filmmaker had been charged with, they got involved.
We can't comment on the finances of Lee Story. However, we can certainly bring a lot of evidence to show that documentary filmmaking is, by and large, in pursuit of profit. Our statement, which can be read on our website at documentary.org, basically pulls together individual statements from filmmakers like Robbie Kenner, who directed Food, Inc., Liz Garbus, who did Searching for Bobby Fischer for HBO and a number of other films, and they personally attest to their long careers, you know, making films for profit, that they wouldn't have careers if they weren't able to make money.
Schmidt explains that documentary filmmakers spend a lot of money preparing, developing, shooting, and producing a film before it is ever received by a broadcaster or a distributor.
If the judge's opinion stands, let's say, that, gee, this really looks like documentary filmmaking is a hobby, not a business, doesn't satisfy their so-called 9-point test. Well, if that were to stand, then filmmakers, all filmmakers, I guess, like Lee Story, would potentially be liable for taxes on business deductions that they've made that would be considered illegitimate, because you can't take deductions on hobbies. You take business deductions on business. That would have a hugely chilling effect on career filmmakers and who work in this arena, and that's many people.
The IDA's brief was accepted by the judge in the case, and the hearings will continue.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.